Chapter 4. Admiral Ghost Ren T'Shalo of the mighty 98th Fleet was soundly asleep in his cabin aboard his flagship, "I am aching to give somebody a beat down, and today is your lucky day," when a squadron of ships from the Home Fleet's Ethics and Compliance Office jumped in at one of the designated approach zones. After a brief exchange of credentials, the ECO ship, "It was like that when we got here," was granted permission to jump in closer, and a dropship soon launched to bring Captain Scarandum aboard the flagship. He was escorted to the Admiral's personal office to meet a rumpled and very grumpy T'Shalo.
"What?" the senior officer asked with a mandible-stretching yawn, then taking a loud slurp from a steaming mug of Fata. "Is so important that it could not wait until a decent hour."
"Sir, one of the Admiral's antennas stood straight up to get the junior officer's full attention.
"I feel obliged to warn you, Captain. If this is some sketchy ECO nonsense, I am not going to be happy with you. An official from the Inquisitor's office was here very late last night, and I was obliged to consume many rounds of drinks with her. Too many."
"I can assure you, sir, that this is not any sort of nonsense, nor is the issue confined to ethics and compliance or the Jarapta Republic. It affects the entire galaxy."
"One moment, please," T'Shalo requested while he took another slurp of hot Fata.
He could not face the day without a mug of the mild stimulant beverage, and although it technically was still the middle of the night in ship time, he suspected that whatever Scarandum was about to dump on him, he would not be going back to sleep.
"Perhaps we could make this more interesting with a wager on whether I can guess what you are about to say."
"Respectfully," Scarandum replied with great regret, while his brain shouted stupid, stupid, stupid at him for missing a golden opportunity,
"that would not be appropriate. I would only be taking your money, sir."
That remark, more than a mug full of steaming Fata, brought T'Shalo fully awake.
"So certain are you?"
"Absolutely, sir."
"Please, I am intrigued. What is your information?"
"Well, sir, the humans have an expression that fits this occasion perfectly."
"Oh, what is that?"
Scarandum leaned back on his couch.
"You are not going to believe this."
The first stop on our galactic kick-ass tour had been a nostalgic revenge play. It was a real crowd-pleaser, sure to bring the house down, especially if that house was struck by one of Valkyrie's railguns. Going to Riker's was a feel-good action, but it really didn't accomplish anything useful. To send a message to the Kristang, we could have destroyed one of their major shipyards, or a weapons depot, or turned the headquarters of a major clan into a smoking crater, or just, you know, sent an actual message with words. We went to Riker's not because the lizard leaders there needed to be punished, or because hitting them would give any kind of solace to the people we rescued. No, I was not under any illusions about our motivations for wreaking havoc on that world. We did it for us, the merry band of pirates. We did it because for years we had been sneaking around in the shadows, keeping our heads down and taking hit after hit without being able to really hit back. We hit Riker's because the pirates were done with that shit, just done. With Riker's a smoking ruin in our rearview mirror, we set course for another meeting, one that promised less ass-kicking and more ass-kissing. Not kissing ass, exactly, but our purpose was more diplomatic than kinetic. The whole diplomacy thing was totally new to me. I hoped I didn't screw it up. The next stop had me personally excited, for it would bring me face to face with someone I had been watching and admiring, someone I had been eager to meet. Admiral T'Shalo of the Jarapta Mighty 98th Fleet. Captain Scarandum's ECO squadron arrived at the 98th barely 6 hours before we got there, so that saved us the time of explaining everything. I won't bore you with the introductions and ceremonies. They were just as much fun, and just as dull, as any sort of military formal occasion can be. Mercifully, Admiral T'Shalo felt the same way I do about ceremonies. He hustled me off to his private office as soon as he could, which was not soon enough for me. His crew all wanted to gawk at me, not just because I am a rarely seen human, but because I am me. News of who had really been flying the ghost ship had raced around the mighty 98th, and the arrival of Valkyrie caused a feverish excitement. All the intense attention made me very uncomfortable, and I reminded myself that I had better get used to it, because it would only get worse once we got back to Earth. I hate to say this, but that is one of the reasons I ordered Chang to stay behind with the Flying Dutchman. Hopefully, by the time Valkyrie returned, the initial furor would have died down, and I could be debriefed without a media circus. But I doubted that. The shocking announcement that humanity had elder weapons would be the biggest news event since Columbus Day itself. No way would the public leave me alone. Anyway, in his office, it was just me, T'Challo, and Captain Scorandum. To my surprise, T'Challo presented me a bottle of genuine American bourbon, a carafe of ice, and a souvenir glass that had the Merry Band of Pirates logo inscribed. That was a thoughtful touch I appreciated. To my dismay, the Admiral expected me to drink the bourbon while he and Scorandum enjoyed a bottle of rare vintage Bourgogne. I sipped carefully while the two big beetles reclined on couches, guzzling Bourgogne and burping with great gusto. Apparently that is considered a polite social thing to do among the Jarraptha, and I didn't want to offend our new friends, so I joined them. In case you are wondering, I do not know the aroma of good vintage Bourgogne when it is straight out of the bottle. When it is burped back up, it reminds me of pool cleaning chemicals, with undertones of eye-wateringly hot peppers, shoe polish, and radiator fluid. But I am not an expert. You should experience it yourself, although I do not recommend that. So, my first attempt at interspecies diplomacy involved getting wasted with a pair of large beetles and trying not to say anything outrageously stupid. It helped that I genuinely was more interested in hearing about T'Challo's exploits than in talking about my own, and he was very obviously proud of the ships and people under his command. He sensed that I really did want him to talk, so I peppered him with questions about his victory over a combined Theran and Bosphorok force at the Battle of New Brentia. At first, he was surprised that I knew so many details of that battle. Then he relaxed, and we talked like old friends. To me, he kind of was an old friend. After all, I had been reading about him for years. The conversation became a bit uncomfortable when he was talking about how he got command of the mighty 98th Fleet. That privilege was granted to him after his astounding victory at the Battle of Glark. While he related the tale, I murmured appropriate things, looking down at my glass so I could avoid his eyes. "The Inquisitors still do not understand," he directed the remark to Scorandum, "where that remarkably accurate intelligence came from. It appeared from nowhere." The ECO captain must have realized the Admiral was expecting him to say something. "It wasn't us," he protested. "Of course not." T'Challo dipped his antennas in a gesture that indicated skepticism, if I was reading Jarraptha the body language correctly. "Really?" Scorandum gestured so vigorously a few drops of Bourgogne sloshed out of his glass onto his uniform. "Admiral, if ethics and compliance pulled off an incredible intelligence coup like stealing the Glark data, there is no way the head office could keep quiet about it. They would want the entire galaxy to know. Also," he took another slurp of Bourgogne, "there would have been substantial wagering action on the clandestine markets. That could not fail to attract the attention of the Inquisitors," he added with a shudder. T'Challo considered. "That is true. Ah, well, I suppose it will remain a mystery then." "That is unfortunate," he said. And that time he was looking at me. Why is my stupid brain so freaking slow?"
The Admiral's antennas stood straight up and he sucked in a breath, his thorax heaving.
"You. It was you."
Well, it's like this.
"You do not deny it, then?"
Suddenly I realized I was alone with two very large beetles.
"You gotta understand, we did it to help you."
"We had no relationship with you at the time," T'Challo noted with suspicion, "nor with your people on Paradise. Was your action motivated by a wager among your crew?"
"What? No."
"Why not?" Scorandum asked, puzzled.
"We're not like that. Not all of us. Not all the time."
I tried to explain to members of a society that was obsessed with gambling. Our military code of conduct does not allow us to wager on the outcome of a future or ongoing operation.
You miss too much, D'Shalo shook his head. Wagering action can be a powerful motivator for your crew.
I will consider it, I said, thinking that would be one more thing for UNEF Command to get pissed at me for.
Admiral, our actions were motivated by self-interest. We wished your people to maintain an advantage over your enemies to protect the humans on Paradise.
Ah, T'Shalo and Scarandum said at the same time, sharing a look and nodding.
Ha! The Admiral laughed, taking a slurp of Burgoge. Colonel Bishop, you have not only solved a mystery, you have ruined wagers across our fleet.
How did I do that?
Substantial amounts have been wagered about who provided the intelligence about the Theranin raid at Glark. My own money was on the Maxulks.
The Maxulks? Scarandum exclaimed, surprised. I should have thought of that. I put my money on the Bosphorak.
Too obvious, D'Shalo snorted. Those thieves at Central Wagering were offering ruinous odds on the Bosphorak being involved.
Well, he chuckled.
We have all lost, then. The joke is on us.
Scarandum grimaced, or that is how I interpreted the tight set of his mandibles.
Tell me, Colonel Bishop, you framed the Bosphorak for all of the ghost ship attacks?
Yes. We also destroyed those first two Maxulk ships that were going to Earth. The planet where the Bosphorak were trying to build atomic compression weapons. The birds genuinely were just trying to copy Theranin weapons there. We took over their moon base and caused it to fire on the planet.
You have been busy, Scarandum snorted.
Colonel, we at the Ethics and Compliance Office pride ourselves on scheming to commit the most creative, the sketchiest, the sleaziest clandestine operations in the galaxy. Now I see we are nothing but amateurs, he spat with disgust.
Captain Scarandum?
I leaned toward him on the awkward couch that was not built for the human anatomy. Aware that I had been drinking, I squashed an alcohol-fueled impulse to be overly friendly.
The merry band of pirates look forward to future operations with the Ethics and Compliance Office. We could be a great team.
Scarandum raised his glass.
I will drink to that.
We all took a sip of our beverages.
You are aware, D'Shalo peered at me over his glass, that the Bosphorak will be outraged to learn that you are the reason they have been severely punished by their patrons. Thank you for that, by the way, he added with a wink.
I answered with a shrug. That is one group of assholes beaten up on another group of assholes. It's not like the Bosphorak would have been friendly to us no matter what we did. The strife between the birds and their patrons weakens that entire coalition. That has to be good for us.
Both beetles nodded, understanding that when I said us, I meant the Jarraptha, humans, and their allies.
The birds will be even more pissed off at their patrons when they learn the Maxulks have been conducting strikes against them for no good reason, except that they are gullible fools. We have made the Maxulks look weak and stupid. The whole galaxy will be laughing at them. Besides, my feeling about the Maxulks and their clients is, well, fuck 'em, you know? However that remark translated, the Jarraptha thought it was uproariously funny. I took that as a good sign for future interspecies relations. After what I guessed was an hour, I had to guess because checking the clock on my Z-phone would not be polite, I pushed the bourbon bottle away.
Gentlemen, thank you, but I want to walk back to my dropship. If I drink any more of this, I will have to be carried.
D'Shalo took the hint.
We are sure you must be very busy, Colonel Bishop, he said with one eye on the bottle.
Whether he was impressed or disappointed with my drinking capacity, he didn't show it. The Admiral had a great poker face.
Before you go, I may be able to help you and the good people of Earth.
Oh? How?
I suggest that we send a representative to Earth, of course.
Yes, please. That was something I was about to suggest.
Before that, I believe you will want to bring home many of your people currently on the planet you call
paradise?
Yes. It didn't surprise me he had guessed that. It was obvious. Valkyrie's passenger capacity is rather limited at the moment, so we, on behalf of the 98th Fleet and of my people, I would like to offer the use of several troop transport ships and a star carrier. They will not be luxurious, but each ship should be capable of transporting several thousand humans, after minor modifications, of course. That is very generous. I stumbled over my words. Very generous, thank you. We would be very grateful for such a thoughtful gift. He waved an antenna. It is the least we could do to signify our admiration for your remarkable accomplishments and our hope for warm future relations between our peoples.
And to show how pleased we are, Scarandum added with a semi-drunken slur of his words, about the generous beatdown you gave to those asshole Maxulks.
Hear, hear. T'Shalo raised his half-empty glass of Burgos.
I picked up my own glass, which still had a finger or two of bourbon in it.
I will drink to that.
Meeting the mighty 98th Fleet lifted spirits aboard the ship. It was good to hear genuine praise from a species that had been kicking much ass on their own, and the offer of transport ships solved a problem I had been struggling with. Maybe those ships would come with a hidden price tag. The governments of Earth could deal with that later. Delivering a beatdown on Rikers had not really changed anything. The humans who died there were still dead, the lizard warrior caste were still murderous assholes, and they would continue to terrorize and bully anyone who couldn't stand up to them. An alliance with the Jarraptha, even limited in scope, brought with it the prospect of real change in the galaxy, a change in the equation of the endless war. Maybe with allies we could begin to bring a halt to the cruelty and suffering the Maxulk's coalition had inflicted across the galaxy. Maybe. Emily Perkins had grandiose plans for the Alien Legion. We had discussed it briefly aboard Valkyrie. While she was concerned that the Legion not settle for half measures that did not create long-lasting change, I was concerned that humanity not get bogged down in commitments that had no defined scope, end date, and exit strategy. The overall strategy would be determined by the nations of UNEF, and I would certainly have an opportunity to provide my experienced input. What I feared was that humanity would get sucked into nation-building on some war-torn planet in the middle of nowhere. Anyway, those kinds of decisions were above my pay grade. It was funny saying that as a colonel, because when I was a grunt, I figured that colonels and general officers made all the important decisions. My brief time as a publicity stunt colonel on Paradise had not shown me what a real colonel's job is. Flying around the galaxy, cut off from headquarters and making decisions on my own also was not typical of what real colonels did for a living.
Man, I hope I never become a real colonel.
The next stop on our galactic kick-ass tour was not exactly kicking ass, it was more like kicking sense into people who are asses. Keepers. Yes, the self-proclaimed keepers of the faith, the willfully blind idiots who left Paradise with the Kristang to demonstrate their continued loyalty to our lizard overlords. Sure, I know the issue is complicated. The infected keepers we met when we stopped them from delivering a bioweapon to Paradise had informed me that just because they are idiots, they are not all motivated by the same idiocy. That is a lesson my parents pounded into my young, stubborn head. Just because someone disagrees with you, that does not make them a bad person. The reverse is also true. Just because someone agrees with you, that does not make them a good person. You have to know why they have an opinion on X or Y. Most of the keepers were idiots, who just could not face up to the fact that we originally signed on to fight the wrong side of the war. They had left Earth with a burning determination to make the Ruhar pay for raiding our world, and they didn't want to hear any facts that made them question their beliefs. Hell, when I first met the Burgermeister in that tiny village on Paradise, I had walked out, rather than hear her tell me what I later learned was the awful truth. So, I did have some sympathy for the keepers of the faith. Though for our purpose, sympathy didn't matter. They were our people. We were bringing them home if we could. They could deal with the consequences of their actions when we brought them home. And that would be an interesting legal mess.
UNFHQ on Paradise would argue that when the Keepers left Paradise to serve the Kristang, they had disobeyed orders from a lawful authority. The Keepers would argue that the only lawful authority was UNF Command on Earth, which had issued orders for us to fight alongside the Kristang. That UNF on Paradise had no legal authority to switch sides in the war. As Skippy would say, "Ugh, man, I am so glad that I am not a JAG lawyer. That argument is a mess on both sides." Fortunately, I did not have to be concerned with legal niceties. The last substantial group of Keepers was on a Kristang planet controlled by the Deathstalkers,
a minor but independent clan currently in a loose alliance with the Black Trees.
I say currently because even for the Lizards, the Deathstalkers had a reputation for treating their alliances casually, as any agreement was only effective if it was the best deal the Deathstalkers could get right that very moment. You might think their well-deserved reputation for sleaziness would make it difficult for the Deathstalkers to make deals with other clans, but the opposite is true. The warrior caste is obsessed with honor, but the reality is they are obsessed with the appearance of honor. With the Deathstalkers openly willing to do anything to gain a slight advantage, and not caring what anyone thinks of their honor, that makes them valuable deal-making partners. For example, by buying, trading for, and stealing human slaves, the Deathstalkers had the only meaningful collection of humans in captivity. The slaves had been purchased so that any clan who wanted to seriously threaten the alien legion had to get Keepers from the Deathstalkers. Two recent events had made the collection more valuable. Emily Perkins had destroyed a small group of Keepers on Jalaxico, demonstrating that making threats with only a handful of humans was a waste of time. And the apparent Legion rescue operation on Rakesh Dewalin left the Deathstalkers with the only supply of human medical subjects. According to Skippy, the clan was fielding competing offers from several major clans, and from the Theranin. "What are the offers, Skippy?" I asked after we pinged a Theranin data relay station for updated info. It's interesting. The Black Trees opened with a weak offer. It's a mutual defense agreement. Of course, the Deathstalkers know that agreement isn't worth the electrons in the document file. The Fire Dragons are offering a planet the Deathstalkers very much want, but the Stalker leadership knows their resources would be greatly overextended to defend and keep that planet. Plus, the Stalkers recently brokered a deal to sell second-hand ships to the Swift Arrow clan, who are planning an invasion of that same Fire Dragon planet. The Deathstalker leaders are debating whether to tell the Fire Dragons about the invasion plan in exchange for something valuable. They are also debating whether they could get a better deal from the Swift Arrows in exchange for not ratting them out to the Fire Dragons. Wow, the Lizards not only love to backstab each other, they are good at it. "They've had a lot of practice, Joe," he said with admiration. "What are the Theranin offering?" "They are offering to not bombard the planet from orbit and slaughter the Deathstalker senior leadership." That is a strong opening offer," I agreed. Maybe. The Deathstalkers have dealt with the Theranin before, so they have a playbook. If the Theranin attempt to carry out their threat, the Stalkers will kill all their Keepers." Smacking a fist into my other hand, I exclaimed, "Shit!" That blew my plan. On the approach to the planet, I had a macho idea of jumping into orbit with our fearsome ghost ship and demand the Lizards surrender the Keepers to us, or at least stand aside while we flew dropships down to pick up our prodigal people. The plan would be worthless if the Lizards pulled the trigger and killed all of their slaves. "Can they do it? Kill them?" "Yes, of course."
"I sense this is a case where you are asking too general a question."
"My bad. Can they kill the Keepers before we could take out whatever explosives or weapons they plan to use?" "Meh, you need to ask a more specific question, Joe. The Lizards could just strangle the Keepers with their bare hands, given enough time." "Fine. How about this? What is their plan to kill the Keepers if the Theranin attack?" "That is a question I can answer. The Keepers are being kept in a cluster of secure buildings, inside a secure compound on a heavily defended military base. The dormitories are wired to explode. Any Keepers who happen to be outside the buildings can be tracked by implanted locator chips and killed by the soldiers on the base. The base has practiced killing the slaves. Even in the worst case, the task could be accomplished in 38 seconds. Shit. Threatening to hit targets from orbit would be useless. The Lizards would know we especially will not risk them killing our people. Okay. Okay, this is the part of the movie where you reveal that you can disable the explosives and buy time for us to pull our people out. Apparently there were more annoying script revisions since I got my copy. My script says this is the scene where the knucklehead commander asks me to do the impossible and fails to acknowledge my awesomeness. Can you do it or not? Yes and no. Yes, I can disable the electronic detonation controls. No, that will not solve the problem, because there is a manual backup that can be engaged in seconds. The lizards regularly practice that backup process. Smythe, I turned to where our star team leader was seated along the back bulkhead of the bridge. What do you think?
I need to study the matter, sir, he replied with an uncharacteristic frown, his brow crinkled.
He and five of the stars had volunteered to remain aboard Valkyrie before we jumped away from Earth, though at the time I had no intention of any ground action. That was before Skippy learned of the Keepers being held by the Deathstalkers. As Smythe was fond of reminding me, I had not been provided a Tier 1 team of special operators in case things went well. We needed the stars when things went sideways. Notice that I said when and not if, because nothing ever went smoothly for the merry band of pirates. Smythe had five stars, plus four of the commandos we shanghaied from Paradise. Commandant Fabron had gone aboard the Flying Dutchman before we jumped away from Earth. It had been his initiative to represent the people on Paradise to UNEF Command, because the governments of Earth needed a first-person, updated account of the situation on that world. He volunteered to stay behind, after I assured him that I did not intend to take any action that required a Spec Ops team, and he saved me the trouble of ordering him to stay behind. During our short time together, I had come to greatly respect Fabron and his calm, quiet leadership. He had made me promise that I would support his return to the Alien Legion. He strongly felt that humans had a long list of unfinished business out in the vast expanse of the galaxy. So, Smythe had nine people to work with for a ground team. The four commandos were the people he felt were most ready to support a star team, and I was just super, super thrilled when I learned that Gunnery Sergeant Lamar freaking Green was one of those four. Really, I could not have been happier about it. Okay, maybe I would have been slightly more happy if Green had gotten drunk and missed the dropship that brought him over from the Dutchman, but that is petty and unworthy and exactly how I honestly feel about it. When Margaret Adams requested a last-minute transfer to Valkyrie, I had done a mental fist pump. Then, seconds later, I saw that Smythe requested Green to be transferred aboard Valkyrie, and I mentally facepalmed myself. Shit. Adams hadn't transferred for me or to see the mission completed. She was following Green. Or she wasn't. Shit, I didn't know. What was I talking about? Oh, yeah, Smythe. I held up an index finger. Hold that thought, Colonel. You, plus nine on your team, plus two, maybe four pilots. That is 14 lives at risk. To recover a bunch of idiots, half of whom will not be grateful to see us. No. I shook my head slowly. We don't have to do this. It's not worth the risk. Sir, Smythe said stiffly. His demeanor reflected the weariness of having to go over an old and continual argument with a commanding officer who just doesn't get it. We have spent the past several years defending the people of Earth. It is my experience that many of our fellow citizens are lazy, dim-witted arseholes. But we do not ask whether they are worthy of our protection. It is the job we signed up for. From her chair beside me, Sims tapped my leg and whispered a simple, "Sir." I got it. Trust your people, she was telling me. Again. My own stupid brain should have known that. When I'm being honest with a self-assessment, holding back information and not trusting my people is my number one flaw. Skippy would say that is actually a subset of my overall general stupidity flaw, but it is true either way. Show me the plan, I told Smythe as he and Sims shared a look. I want minimal risk to our people. To the crew, I added to clarify which people I meant. Smythe gave me three options for insertion. Suppression of enemy defenses, securing the keepers, setting up and defending a perimeter, safe fly ingress and egress corridors for our dropships, and pulling out his team under fire if necessary. All three plans were well-researched, for Valkyrie had jumped into the system so Skippy could have his way with the local databases. From the distance, that was enough to ensure Valkyrie was not detected,
Skippy could only extract data. Any rougher treatment of the local computer network would have to wait until he was closer to the planet. He was being careful, not because he was concerned about his infiltration being noticed by the laughably crappy Krestang information security systems, but because he was concerned about being noticed by the Theranan spyware that was woven throughout every computer system on and around the planet. The first phase of any operation is to gather intel. Okay, the real first phase is to establish intent, meaning to decide what you want to accomplish. But I had already issued a very clear and detailed commander's intent document. Yes, I had actually taken the time and effort to write an official form like I was supposed to. Maybe being a field-grade officer was growing on me. Anyway, we had all the intel we needed. Correction. Smythe had all the intel he needed for his part of the operation. What I did not have is a good awareness of any assets that the Theranan had in-system. Knowing that, Smythe had planned his silent insertion and securing of the Keepers so those phases would not be detected from orbit. By the time Smythe commenced the noisy part of the operation, it would not matter whether a Theranan ship saw what was going on. I hoped that was true. One thing I noticed immediately about all three options presented by Smythe. They were riskier and more aggressive than other plans he had shown to me recently. That made me wonder if Major Kapoor had exerted a restraining influence on Smythe because Kapoor left Valkyrie and was now on Earth. Or maybe the reason the current set of plans had a feeling like an extreme sports event was due to Captain Frey. Our Canadian special operator certainly did not hold anything back in her own operations. Smythe had met Frey during an adventure race. Perhaps in the future we should look for Star Team candidates who enjoy gentler leisure time activities like birdwatching and knitting sweaters. Like that was ever going to happen. One option I rejected immediately. I suspected he included that lunatic plan to give me something to discard, so the other options seemed reasonable by comparison. We went back and forth, with me asking questions and objecting to this and that, until I was satisfied the risk was manageable, and he was satisfied I had not watered down his plan so much that the whole operation was pointless.